chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Section 9. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Van Weber on the board. Back from his trip to Vegas, where evidently it was cold there as well, but not as cold as here. This is, we could be going for yet another, well, how about yet another, a new record low tonight. S&P futures down 875, Dow futures down 76, NASDAQ futures down 13, a day after the big Fed announcement where they lowered rates another 0.25%. And really kind of failed to tell anybody why. They just, did it because the president, I guess, is bitching at him. I'm not sure why, but the, got to be a reason in there someplace. Lowest unemployment, stock market at records. Let's lower the interest rates down to 1.5%. Okay. Make sure savers don't get a dime. Interesting stuff. But that was the day. No major screw-up at the press conference. So the market did not fall. Sometimes it does when he talks. And then the people afterward, all they did were congratulate him on a great presentation, didn't screw up, and they hit the needle right, you know, arrow right in the bullseye, whatever all the various different things. And we've got the Nationals winning the World Series. 95 years, in the immortal words of Jack Brickhouse, anybody can have a bad century, but they sure played well. 18-31, almost everybody going to get fired. They're going to break up the team, and there they are, World Series champs. I mean, who would have thunk that? Hey, Hal, how are you?
I'm doing good, Tom. How you doing?
Doing all right. Professor Hal Snarr. What do you think, Nationals, Al? Anybody can have a bad century, huh? 95 years.
If you would have said at the beginning of the series that the home team wouldn't have won any games, I would have thought you were crazy. But
isn't that crazy?
Man, 0-4, 0-3 at home.
Well, Kevin said when it made it to 6, it was already a record. That had never happened before. So,
and not only in just baseball, but any professional, the major sports that have series, which there's three of them: baseball, basketball, and hockey. Never happened.
It makes me think, because baseball parks provide the home team with advantages that basketball courts don't, right? So maybe the Nationals,
they used to more they used to more than they do now.
Are they more standardized than they were?
Well, I'll think of the ones like with the original really fast AstroTurf.
Yeah,
St. Louis. I mean, if you didn't have an outfield of Greyhounds,
yeah,
which St. Louis always had, they had a huge advantage in their park.
Well, they set their defense.
Yeah.
So they're hitting. I mean, was it Vince Coleman? He was awesome on the artificial turf, right?
Yeah. It's, well,
Vince Coleman, Willie McGee, like those guys were so
fast.
They
were just awesome on that turf.
There was a hockey guy a few years ago, one of the older guys in the league, and he said back when they had the everybody's rink was a little different. He said you had home ice advantage. He goes, no, they're exactly the same. He goes, there's no advantage.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like that movie with Russell Crowe, Mystery Alaska.
Yeah.
Where they have the hockey, they bring the Rangers, I think, in from New York, and they're going to have a game on the pond. But the Rangers, of course, bring in a Zamboni. They make sure the ice is nice and flat because lake ice is a lot different than NHL ice, right?
Oh, I would think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, your hero, John Madden, venue never won a football game.
What's that?
Venue never won a football game. You know, he said, we're talking to him about the home field advantage. He goes, just remember, venue never won a football game.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that in college. I think in the NFL, you want to win half your games on the road and then all your games at home.
Yeah.
And for some reason, these experts kind of dismiss all these home games. These big programs play. I mean, Ohio State sometimes never leaves the state of Ohio in their non-conference schedule, and I think it provides a big advantage for the big programs.
Well, I think it's a disadvantage when you start talking about one of the smaller schools that plays Ohio State, where sometimes they make you get out of the bus and walk through the fans, and those kids are 18 years old, for God's sake.
I know, yeah, it's pretty intimidating. I've been at Ohio State Stadium, and it's it's pretty impressive.
Oh, God,
I mean,
yeah.
it's like a Greek temple,
yep.
You know. It's not sunk into the ground like, you know, Michigan's stadium is. It's above ground, and it's pretty massive. It's pretty intimidating when you look at it.
I was there once. I couldn't believe it. And when they start singing, they don't sing like the Ohio fight song. They sing the state song.
Yeah.
And everyone in the place is tearing up. It's like our state against you guys. It's like... I mean,
Ohio State University.
Well, obviously Notre Dame has their shtick with the religion going and everything.
Yeah.
But I thought Ohio State was way more over the top. You don't see people.
Well, the crowd, you know, the crowd, as big as that crowd was when I went there in 2003, I think it was, Washington State was ranked six or something. And we had end zone seats, and I didn't think the crowd was all that loud. You go to a Husky Stadium, with a slightly smaller crowd, and it's probably five times louder because of the roof.
What did you think of the rules on drinking for the tailgaters at Ohio State? It's so Ohio-ish that you can't be seen with a bottle of beer or a drink. It has to be in one of those red plastic cups.
So all I know is when I was there, there was probably maybe 200,000 people tailgating, and 100,000 got in the game.
Yeah,
and there were probably about 2 million beer cans crushed on the asphalt. If you looked at the road that you walked on, it was just beer cans smashed as thin as paper for probably half a mile. It was crazy how many beer cans were on the ground. Crushed.
Yeah, you have to be in a red plastic cup. If you're caught drinking out of the bottle, they arrest you. And
really, because man, I that's one thing I noticed is the beer cans were just people were walking on top of beer cans, and the beer cans covered the road like a carpet.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Well, it's because you got to crush them and you got to pour them in your cup.
Yeah, I guess you got to get rid of them quick, right?
So
I wonder how much money this the university makes off of recycling aluminum cans on game day.
Wow, I mean, well, they've got all that stuff going at the Irish games now. They have the big, all the different plastic. This one's for metal, this one's for plastic. I mean, they're really into it.
Oh, at the Irish games?
Yeah.
Because I went to the Notre Dame-Washington State game back in 2003 or 4, and, man, that was pretty fun. I had a good time there. We should have beat Notre Dame. We had a two-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter, and the Pac-12 officials, at the time Pac-10, they started flagging us for unsportsmanlike conduct, and Notre Dame got back into it, and I think Notre Dame won in overtime.
I think I was at that game. Washington, we were in white, right?
Washington State was white and probably gray pants, I think.
Well, I saw one.
And it went into overtime. It went into overtime.
On one of the Washington teams, it might have been Washington, Audrey and I went to see, and they got these two guys on the sidelines. I mean, talk about the difference in sports. I mean, the Michigan team that beat Ohio State, it's their 50th anniversary this year.
Uh-huh.
So one of my friends is going up there. He was a long snapper on the team. He was a center, but he never really played center, but he was a long snapper. And he said that the only guy on the team that Bo let be over like 230 pounds was Deardorff, because he was that big of a guy. He said, everybody else, I mean, all the linemen were 225, 230, because all you did was run. I mean, you were in spectacular shape. Everybody had a pull. Everybody had to get out in front of a halfback. Well, we go to this Washington game. I think it was Washington, not Washington State. There's these two guys, they happen to be black guys, on the sidelines. Audrey goes, what are those two guys doing? How did they pass the physical? These guys were immense. I mean, they were absolute fatsos. I mean, politically incorrect. So I'm thinking, what are these guys even doing? There's no way these guys could have run 100 yards.
Yeah.
And so, well,
you know, when Washington State played at Notre Dame, our offensive tackles were like 6'7", 6'6". It was crazy how tall they were.
Yeah, yeah.
And I heard the Notre Dame fans talking about how tall our left and right tackles were. They were really long. I can remember one of them laying out to block a defensive back, and he looked like he stretched from the hash marks to the sideline, man. It was crazy how long he was.
Some of those guys are pretty impressive physically, but there's not many. I mean, in any team, if you go out to practice, you see maybe four or five guys like that. I mean, there just aren't that many. Just walking down the street, you don't run into too many people that are like six. I mean, I used to be 6'4", I'm a little shorter now, but I never, very rare did I walk down the street and find somebody a head taller than me.
No, there's just no way. But, you know, the funny thing is I was doing a referee to a high school all-star camp down in Orem, Utah, about 2-3 weeks ago, and man, I couldn't believe how many tall kids there were. I'm 6'1", and most of the time I'm kind of like one of the tallest guys around, but I think half the kids were at least 6'3" or taller. It was crazy how many tall kids
were.
What
a basketball tournament, you're not exactly getting a random sample.
Yeah, it's not random. I mean, it's basketball, right? But there were some 6'10" guys, 6'9". There were quite a few of them too. It was crazy how tall they were. So you know, the bad thing about that camp was everything was high pick and roll. I don't know what happened to basketball, but man, I'll tell you, I'm doing these games 5 in a row. Every up and down was a high pick and roll, and somebody shooting a 3. What happened to basketball?
Holy smokes. It's gone. As soon as somebody decided that you're better off taking a 3-pointer than you are a mid-range in terms of percentages, the whole game got shot.
Yeah, it's just not fun to watch. It just isn't.
It's like playing in the playground. First guy over half court with the ball shoots.
Yeah, it is crazy how I think the Golden State Warriors, honestly, I think they kind of ruined basketball with everybody shooting threes.
Well, they weren't the first, but yeah. They're the best, and everybody wants to be like them.
Well, they were making them, and so these kids see these guys making them and winning NBA championships. So 6'10" guys, 6'8" guys, high pick and roll, shoot a 3.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, what do you make of the situation with the Fed and the money and all this stuff? What I did, one of the listeners sent me this thing yesterday about. Actually, I was on another show yesterday. We were talking about what the Fed's. What do you make? I don't know how much of a monetarist, but I think you study this stuff for your classes. What do you make of what the Fed's been doing in the last month? What is there something? Am I just being suspicious? Is there something wrong? Why all of a sudden?
No, it's just all that's going on is when the Fed bought all those securities and put all that stuff on its balance sheet, and then it instituted interest on reserves. Interest on reserves at that point was a binding price floor, and so you didn't see any fluctuations at all, hardly, in the federal funds rate during the last 10 years. And I think I remember telling my students this in 2009 or 10. Man, interest on reserves is so big. I don't think I'll ever see a point where the downward sloping demand for reserves will ever intersect the vertical part of the reserve supply curve. Because, you know, there's like a $2-3 trillion gap in between, right?
Yep.
But what has happened over the last 10 years is, you know, checking deposits have increased. GDP's increased, people have more income, the economy's much bigger, the demand for reserves shifts outward in demand deposits. So we've gotten to the point in the last 2 months where for some banks, their demand for reserves are so high that they intersect the vertical part of the supply curve. Whereas other banks, I think like Bank of America, they have lots of excess reserves still because they use them to meet their capital requirements, right? The stress test. So some of the banks have lots of excess reserves, some of them don't. And so I think what you're seeing is these demand curves bouncing no longer along a flat part of the demand curve, but on the vertical part, the flat part of the supply curve. They're bouncing now on the vertical part of the supply curve, and that's causing the oscillations in the federal funds rate, and all the Fed's doing is, like it did in the past, to keep the federal funds rate at its target, it would do an open market purchase. It hasn't had to do that in the last 10 years. It could just set interest rates by fiat, by just dictate, right? Because there were so many reserves that was a binding, the interest on reserves was a binding price floor. And so all that's happening now is demand is oscillating during the day, and it's oscillating up and along the vertical part of the reserve supply curves, which is causing the federal funds rate to oscillate. So to me, it's a nothing burger. It's just that the reserves are drying up in some parts of the banking system.
Well, why is that? I mean, but it's not just, I'm looking at the Federal Reserve balance sheet trends right now in sense.
Yeah, it's still huge. It's still huge. And I think Powell said yesterday that in order to keep the federal funds rate from oscillating, they need about $1.5 trillion in reserves.
Well,
and that's what they're probably going to do that. And they're going to have to do even more of that now that they've lowered 25 basis points. Because when you lower the binding price floor, you get less unemployed reserves. So they're going to have to even buy more purchases than they had anticipated, I think.
You're going to have to go through this one more time for me, because I'm supposed to know this stuff. You know, I've been studying this stuff for 40 years, and I find no reason that could be good that all of a sudden, since September 4th, these guys have had to pour more money into the balance sheet, really, than any time. Almost, it's almost as bad as the first 3 months in 2008. And they've got the money supply growing by 7 to 8% with a growth at 1.9, and still there's not dough. Is somebody broke? I mean, I got this thing from one of the listeners yesterday talking about that these banks, that J.P. Morgan has paid $77 billion this year to buy back their own stock, and how their reserves they could be a lot more than they are, and all they're doing is running around buying their own stock, so you know the executives make more dough because they run the stock up. I mean, something does not. In the midst of this great economy, you don't have to panic $200 billion into the balance sheet in a 4 week period. Hell, I mean, you just don't.
Well, I think what it is, if you go back to 2008 before they instituted interest on reserves, if the New York Fed isn't buying bonds and buying and selling treasuries on a daily basis, the federal funds rate is going to cycle.
Right. Oh, I understand.
And so, over the last, since 2009, the Fed hasn't had to do open market purchases or sales to set the federal funds rate, because they had purchased so much, so many securities. You know, they purchased $600 billion in the first 2 months of up until like 2000. You know, January 2009, they had purchased $600 billion in mortgage-backed securities and whatnot. So what that did with, if it wasn't for interest on reserves, the federal funds rate would have been driven probably toward negative territory, not just, you know, it wouldn't have stayed positive, in my opinion. It would have been driven below zero, and we see that in other countries. So what they did is they put the interest on reserves in to prevent, because they had to buy so many securities, they put interest on reserves in to kind of as a price floor. And so over the last 10 years, when they want to raise the federal funds rate, they just lift the floor.
Right.
That's all they do.
Right.
But to, you know, because the demand for reserves has gotten so large, because one of the shifters of demand is demand deposits. As demand deposits grow over time, the demand for reserves grows and shifts to the right. And there's been such an increase in all of that, the demand for reserves curve is back to where it was before the financial crisis. It's now intersecting the vertical part of the reserve supply curve. And so when it cycles during the day, which it will, it's going to cause fluctuations in the federal funds market. So they're kind of back to what I call normal mode.
Well, they are sort of, and they aren't. And this is what I'm trying to. This is what's. It's very difficult to report on this.
Yeah.
And you know, because it's. Speaking of which, did you see how bad the reporting was? We'll have to ask Maddie about this. He was in Vegas. How bad the reporting was on this new rule about college kids?
The one that the NCAA came out with?
Yeah, let's talk about that after the break. But
yes,
we know, you and I know, and I think a lot of the listeners know, that even when you were trying to manage a federal funds rate, say your federal funds rate is 3, you know, it's normal, or 2.5 or something, to keep it there, I've always said, and I think you've agreed with me on a couple times, that's a really tough job of the Fed, because in the way our system is set up, individual banks can essentially create money just by giving a loan.
Yeah.
So to maintain a federal funds rate, you're right. Once for sure, maybe twice a week, you need to either drain some stuff out or put some stuff in the pool, just like a really nice swimming pool. You're always putting a little water in or taking a little water out, right? I mean, that's what they do. But when you start talking about, but here's where the reporting and the explanation shifts. It's when you start talking about what I'm talking about versus you, and what we've said this morning. When you just decide I'm going to put $200 billion sort of in, what you're doing there is you are literally turning on the printing press and putting it in. It has nothing to do at that point with the federal funds rate. I mean, what they're talking about this year with the $60 billion a month. Don't call it QE4, but the $60 billion a month. I mean, you know, what they're basically saying is, if, you know, the Trumpino or whoever is there wants to run a $1 trillion deficit, you only have to borrow $250 billion. We're going to make up the other $750 is really what they're telling. That has nothing to do with the Fed funds rate, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, just I think
the reason why you're not getting any inflation is because the banks keep these reserves. They don't really lend them out. They're kind of keep them in there because the Fed is paying them interest to do so. So the paradigm shifted in 2008. So I think what you see is who has access to credit. I think the investor class, people buying on margin. I think those are the kinds of people that have really incredible access to credit. And I think what you see is you see inflation in the kind of assets that class of investor buys. I don't think you see the inflation as much, you know, the measured inflation. There's inflation. You don't see the inflation like you would pre-2008.
Well, I'm going to say that in my opinion, it's enough of a rain here, Hal. So last Saturday, since it was pouring, and I was supposed to go for a walk, and I was just sitting inside. I did some work on some stuff on inflation. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no point in me going anywhere on TV or any place and talking about it because nobody will believe it. The amount of inflation I see right now is dramatic.
Oh, I see it too. Yeah, I see my paycheck. I'm getting paid about what I was in real terms 10 years ago. And man, we're tight. Our budget is tight. And sure, we have four kids. But man, it just seems like the little purchases we used to make didn't add up to much. But the purchases we make throughout the month now, they add up to a lot. And I'm experiencing the inflation. I don't know what the Fed's talking about.
Well, I'll give you two spots that, you know, feel free to use in class. If there's a couple of sites that'll tell you the cost of hospitalization for a company like PTI or your university, what it costs for hospitalization for an employee's family. Okay, in 2000 that number was, I don't know exact, this was Saturday, it was 7,500, say 7,700. You put that in the inflation calculator, today it should be 10,000, because according to their inflation, the CPI thing from 2000. I'll ask you, what should something be more today than it was in 2000 according to their calculator?
Probably 20 years, probably 1.5 times, maybe.
This man is good. 1.46.
Yeah.
But you know what the cost of hospitalization for companies,
probably 3 times that.
Well, it just blew through 20,000.
So, in fact,
it's up 300%.
Yeah.
Rather than 46%. And I will say that the other thing that basically saves their lying asses is that I'm going to say half the cost of education is buried in property taxes, which they don't count.
Yeah.
So when you talk about people's property taxes being up X, it's because of inflation. I mean, because of education. And you know the cost of higher education. I mean, it's off the chart.
Oh, yeah.
So, if they want to count those things, and they have stuff like, you know, the Ford 150, according to them, is the same price it was 10 years ago. Yet it's twice as much. I mean, SP Futures down 9. We'll be right back. Professor Hellstar, Mr. Matt Weber. We'll talk about some gambling from Vegas. He was just there. We'll talk about all kinds of stuff. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox. at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Blowing up paying stocks and jocks. I'm Tim Out. Mr. Hellstar, Professor Hellstar, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP futures now down 10.25, and NASDAQ futures down 19.25. Some of this is due to a negative report out of China. It says they don't think that they can do a long-term deal as long as Trump's in office. I don't know where that one came from, but just when you thought we've been 2 weeks without the market being shaken around by a Chinese rumor, here we are right back again. The Dow futures down 81. However, Apple's up 394. They had their earnings last night, beat on top and bottom line. Even though the revenue on the iPhone continues to fall, so they're up $4, say, so not much of a big move. Facebook earnings came out. They're up $8. They're trading 196. They weren't spectacular, but they were okay. The big news we'll talk about, everyone done with this, is Twitter saying no political ads. And I'm going to ask Mr. Weber when we're done, is that even possible to do that? Because I don't know you can on radio shows, but anyway, we'll dig that out because Matty knows more about that than me. Over in Europe, DAX down 38.3%. Europe's been kind of quiet. FTSE down 71. That's a full percent. Back around down 25.4%. So down, but not crazy. Nikkei up 83.3%. Shanghai down 10.3%. Hang Seng up 239. That's 0.9%. So they're bouncing back and forth almost a percent a day. Hang Seng. The bonds 1.73. So they're very little changed after the Fed announcement. Bund is actually back down a little bit again, down to 0.40. negative. They were up to 0.37 or something. Japan down a little bit too. They're down 0.15 negative. They were as high as 0.11 negative. I'll try and say that 100 times. Oil, we've got down 41 cents, 54.65, but still right in the middle of this, like 52.5, 55.5 range. Very narrow range land in oil. Brent 60.43, natural gas 2.71, up almost 50 cents from my call at the bottom 2 weeks ago. Of course, I didn't buy any, neither did for me or my clients. RBOB gas 166. Maddie, if you were walking in with the weather today, I'd say you'd want some natural gas futures, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Gold up 13.30 today, 15.10. Silver up 23 cents. I put a bullish spread on in gold yesterday, so maybe it's a good day for us. Silver back over 18, 18.10. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have rainy and slick conditions throughout the area, and then the further west and north into the suburbs, there's some snow mixed into that, so keep that in mind as you're heading out this morning. But so far, so good as far as the area expressways, roadways, and tollways are concerned. The only significant issue was on the tri-state. Northbound, just before 87th Street, we had an earlier crash. That crash has been cleared, but there's some resulting congestion, so expect delays coming up the tri-state, I-294 northbound on the south side just before 87th. No issues on the Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Traffic building on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, but no accidents. Same for the Kennedy and Eden. Suburban tollways are all quiet. But again, keep in mind that weather as you're heading out this morning. Speaking of that weather, we'll be overcast today with rain, sleet, and snow mix. Could see some accumulation in the city later on this afternoon. 1 to 3 inches are expected, as we'll be right around freezing for a big part of the day. A high of 37 today. Right now it's rainy and 35 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 77. Right now it's clear and 42. In sports, as the guys mentioned last segment, the Nationals are your 2019 Major League Baseball World Series champions after they rallied back from a 2-0 deficit to beat the Astros 6-2 last night. Nats scored 3 in the 7th, 1 in the 8th, and 2 more in the 9th to put that one away. With the road team winning all 7 games, the Nationals won 4 games in Houston. The Astros won all 3 in Washington, but it wasn't quite enough. Steven Strasburg was named World Series MVP.
I'm going to say that's a record that'll never be broken.
I would agree. It's never happened in any of the major sports, including baseball, until now. NBA basketball. And obviously it couldn't be broken. It could only be tied.
Right.
NBA basketball. The Bulls lost to the Cavs last night, 117-111. Suns beat the Warriors, 121-110. But the big story was Steph Curry broke his hand last night, so he will be out for an extended period of time. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. They don't return into action until Saturday night at the LA Kings. Coyotes lost last night to the Canadiens 4-1. And Thursday night football tonight will be the undefeated San Francisco 49ers at Arizona. Chief.
Hal, we had a professor on yesterday, Professor Russell Rhodes. And guess what he did to our assistant producer, Angelica Vlasenko, who's very tall, very attractive, lady from the Ukraine, speaks with a Ukrainian accent. She's just a nice lady. Guess what he asked her to say?
What was that?
We're a moose and squirrel.
In Russian?
Well, no, just remember Rocky and Bullwinkle, Natasha? We're not moose and squirrel.
It's been a while since I saw that.
It's she popped out with it. It sounded just like Natasha. He was laughing. She was a good sport. What is this all about? So then he pulled up the YouTube of Moose and Squirrel. She was dying laughing. She goes, I sound just like that. Yes, you do. good joke had by all. Hey, I was on the show yesterday, Harold. I want your opinion a little bit. I was kind of ranting and raving. Imagine that. I don't like it because I've seen it, in my lifetime when the Fed or anybody goes to an extreme and it stays there for a while and then all of a sudden, I guess cooler heads prevail or you go back toward the middle, which inevitably happens. You cause so much carnage. You cause so much damage by doing that. That I never thought I'd have to see it again. I mean, in those days, clearly it was Volcker going too far too long, I think. I don't think he had to do it as much as he did. Where he basically put anybody in the savings and loan business or anybody who was giving a loan out to somebody you know, at 6%, all of a sudden you're paying 12% for passbooks to finance it. You just buried an industry and you buried people. Now, other people made out okay on it, but this thing here now, I mean, the idea that we have to keep these rates down this low, I mean, who are we protecting? Are we protecting the person who just paid, you know, $3 billion for the Major League Baseball team when 5 years ago they were $500 million? Are we protecting the auto companies that are selling people cars at $31,000 and they're getting a loan for 29, 5, 7 years, no interest? I mean, what if 4 years from now, interest rates, I'm going to say, are normal and the Fed funds rate is, you know, 2.75? How the hell is General Motors and Ford, are they all out of business now that they've got to pay 6% for that loan that they gave to somebody for free? I mean, at some point you get so deep into it that you end up protecting the mess you just made instead of saying, what are we doing here? Why aren't we just normal? I mean, am I wrong here or not?
Well, you know, I actually think it probably is going to trend even lower. I you look at since the 1980s, the 10-year yield is just on a downward, pretty steady trend, and I think it might even go lower.
But when you say trend, let me ask an insightful.
I mean, do interest rates? I mean, we would think that interest rates would probably go back up, but if you look at what the Fed does, I mean, it grows the money supply. Over the long run, it's just pulling interest rates towards zero, and maybe in 10 years, we'll think that minus two is normal.
Well, what I'm asking, I guess, is it seems to me that they're having to do more and more and more just to get to the same spot.
Yeah.
And to me, where it's especially in Europe and in Japan, they have to buy more and more stock to keep the place afloat. I think they're running to the end of the cliff. I don't see Japan owning, you know, 90% of ETFs. What are they up to, 35 or 40? You know,
wow.
Are we going to go, you know, 20 trillion on the balance sheet and still say there's no inflation just to keep interest? I mean, it seems like there's a normality here, and they keep fighting the trend. Now the question is why? I mean, when you say that these long-term rates are trending this way, I don't doubt you, but when the Fed blows up $300 billion in 4 weeks, that's not a trend. I mean, that's an action by somebody. that's like take the submarine down, close the hatch. I mean,
I'm just saying it
seems like they're having to do more and more to keep it here.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they?
Well, that might be turning because the M1 multiplier is about 1.2 now. For about 10 years, it was under 1.
Yep.
So monetary policy was very ineffective. I mean, you add a dollar of reserves and you're only getting, you know, 70 cents in new M1. Now you put a dollar in reserves and you're getting about $1.20 in new M1.
Well, but they,
so that might be bad in terms of inflation right there, right?
But if you look at, I'm saying, and that's the part that I was, you know, ranting about yesterday, and I'm not, you know, is it if we all of a sudden, hell, if you decided, we put you in the Oval Office and you said, guess what? We're going to have 100% inflation. And all of a sudden, every dollar bill in my pocket, I walk over to the Fed and they give me a $2 bill. And if I owed you $20, I now owe you $40. And if I'm making $50,000 a year, I'm now making $100. And the price of gas went from $2.50 to $5. If everything just doubled, it'd be like a stock split. It wouldn't do anybody any good.
No, it wouldn't, yeah.
But so the idea with inflation, like last time, it started in oil. And then it went to food. And then it's never even. I mean, like I said, I don't want to go through it again, but the people in the unions that got the nice contracts that got an escalation clause, I was, you know, filling out their card, upping their wages, you know, 5% a quarter, and mine weren't going up at all because I was a salaried guy. So I mean, it's very uneven, and it hurts people. Obviously, this time around, it hasn't helped the median age or wage at all. Yet if you happen to own a baseball team 15 years ago, you're up what, 6 times?
Yeah.
God help you. If you're in a hospital business, how much more are you making now? Not a doctor, but everybody else. I mean, it's there. It's just very localized.
Well, I think the effects of monetary policy aren't evenly distributed at all.
Right.
It's just not. And the Austrians have a pretty good theory on this, I think. It's like molasses. The people who get the money right when it's printed, when it's right out of the printing press, they can buy assets before the prices go up. But
right.
By the time we get that money, the prices have all gone up, but our wages haven't gone up.
If
the effects of monetary policy are not uniformly distributed at all.
If I was
they're skewed.
If you gave me 2 minutes to talk to your class, one of your theses is if I get two guys to go do the work or two ladies, I'm going to say I've done this a little bit, Hal. If you go back over really to the 1960s and you look at changes in money supply growth, and every time there's a bulge, give it about 6 months to 9 months, and you'll see the stock market run up. And every time you'll see them cutting back, give it 6 to 9 months, and the stock market runs down. Because the first place that money goes is in the stock market. I mean, today, I mean, I don't know where the market's going to go today with this Chinese news. We could be down. We, you know, who knows? But by and large, you just keep telling yourself as a trader, which I try to do because I keep my people protected, but I also want to be long. $3 billion a day is going somewhere.
Yeah, well, you know, if you look at, there's a graph I like to show my students in Mishkin's Money and Banking book, where he makes the argument that we've had high money growth rates and low inflation rates. Well, that's a short-run view. If you, from a point where you have a spike in the growth rate of money, and you look at inflation over the next, say, year and a half, you always see an acceleration in inflation.
Right.
So there's a lagged effect to it as well, right?
I would say, having been older than you, having lived through that mess before, I think the lag is dramatic, you know. I'm going to say that the last year, when Volcker was really clamping down on the money supply and it was, you know, the interest rates were 15%, we were in some really a nasty recession.
I'm gonna Farmers say that, protesting the Federal Reserve.
Yeah. I'm going to say
tractors that driving around D.C.
I'm going to say, hell, that last, certainly the last 6-8 months, maybe the whole last year, there was no inflation. There was none. But the way they pick up the numbers, I think there's such an, what you just said, I think is absolutely gold. There's a tremendous lag to it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is, but if it's just the bureaucracy of the numbers.
It's because the people who get that money, that newly printed money or the newly digitized money, are buying assets before the prices go up. By the time we get the money, it might be 6 months, 7 months, 8 months later. By the time we get that money, the prices have gone up.
Well, I think the simplest example of what I was just saying is the Y2K fiasco. No phones were going to work, nothing was going to work, right? Okay, yeah. We had so many meetings at the CBOE about that how every chip and every phone on the floor is actually a secondary chip that should have gone on something else, but if it didn't work for that, they'd put it in a phone, and that the old line of, those old lines of code, Maddie's, you're too young for this, those old line of codes would have the date in there, like every five lines or something, I still remember some of this stuff. But, so the Fed poured how much money into the economy in the 6 months before Y2K, which just happened to coincide with the dot-com bubble.
Yeah.
And so the inflation went all into those stocks.
And it wasn't an accident that the dot-com bubble happened at that time.
No, God no.
The Fed creates the credit bubble. The credit expansion creates the stock market bubble.
And it's no, after we didn't fall apart, they started pulling some of that money out. When was the high? The March of that year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and everything crashed. But every time you look at these things, so whenever the Fed does this and the market runs up, inevitably, well, at least it used to be, there's someday they turn the other way and the market would come down. And I don't know. Now I feel that people lose more on the way down than they make on the way up. And that's why I don't like to see that happen. I want the market to go up because everybody's making more money.
Yeah. Business is expanding. There's not a lot of malinvestments.
Right.
The investments that are profitable get financed. The ones that aren't profitable don't get financed. Unfortunately, during one of these credit expansions, even the bad investments, the ones that might only return, I mean, when the interest rates are 1%, you're probably going to finance a project that might be expected to earn 2%, right?
Right.
If interest rates are normal, those 2% expected return investments don't get financed. So that creates a lot of malinvestment. And that's the problem with the credit expansion, is all the bad projects that wouldn't have been financed get financed.
Well, I think it also is J.P. Morgan, for instance, maybe not even them because they are a bank, but Microsoft can borrow at what to buy a place. The place they're buying, you know, I'm not saying they do this, but drug companies do this all the time. Drug companies, which are most of them are AAA, can buy a smaller drug place that has some innovation I'm going to say 2.5%. What did John Deere just go out and, were they 2.3%? They went out for 30 years or something ridiculous like that? Where you and I, if that's our drug place, and we want to get our product through the FDA, and we go out and borrow $100 million, our number might be 6.
Yeah.
Well, so that, you can't let that happen, because all you do is end up with monopolies and all the other stuff. I mean, everything they're doing is causing this concentration. It shouldn't be that big of a, you and I shouldn't be shut out of the credit market, and those guys come in and swoop us up.
Yeah. Well, I do an example in my class all the time where, if the federal funds rate goes to, say, -5, the prime rate's going to be -2, and the Fed makes the loan to, a bank can turn around and lend that money out at, -2. They're making 3% on that.
Right.
And who's paying the interest? The Fed's paying the interest, right?
Right.
Who's paying the interest to the company that borrows at -2? The bank. So the corporation that borrows at -2, the prime lender that borrows at -2, their interest is being paid for by a bank, and the bank is doing that because the Fed's paying the bank's interest at -5. It's kind of nuts if you really think about it.
Well, I have a question for you. Can we really go negative still having currency in circulation? Or are they going to have to...
I think negative rates are real possible if the post-Keynesians are correct and big banks aren't really reserve constrained. They can make loans, and the Fed will paper over those loans with loans from the Fed to those big banks. If these big banks aren't reserve constrained, the Fed can lend to them at -5. They'll lend to a prime lender at -2. The bank is making 3%.
But the bank is the Fed is still not the prime supplier of funds to the banks.
Yeah.
You and I are.
Yeah.
So in order for them to decide that we're gonna get -2%, which would be one hell of a tax, first thing you and I are gonna do is take our whatever we got in there in cash and put it in a safety deposit box. We're not gonna give them 2%.
Yeah.
So in order for them to make this, I'll use the term, work, they're going to have a cashless society.
Yeah.
And now so that means
maybe that's the purpose of the whole thing, because
maybe
you know tax collectors don't like cash because there's so much activity under the table that maybe a lot of this push for these really low interest rates is to push people out of cash.
Well, I would agree, but I got to believe that even in this, I'm not a gun guy. But if all of a sudden I have no place to do with my wealth but put it in a bank and they suck 2-3% a year out of me, I might have to go buy some bullets.
Well, a very large piggy bank, too.
Well, I'm saying, I don't know if you listen to CNBC, but Becky Quick, who I think is very bright, I was going to say Quick, I don't want to be like that, but she was on with Larry Summers one day, and Larry Summers goes, well, we might have to go to negative interest rate. She goes, well, I'm just going to pull my money out of the bank. And he goes, well, that's why you shouldn't be able to do that.
Huh? Yeah.
She looked at him like, "What are you from Mars?"
Yeah.
But every time I see or talk to a young person and say we don't need any cash, I go, "You have no idea how much just the fact that you can get cash makes you somewhat independent."
Yeah.
Nobody has to see everything you do.
Well, going to cashless society is a kind of a 1984 nightmare if you really think about it,
yeah.
Because everything you do is observable.
Right.
You can't hide from anybody. You can't be anonymous. You're just everything you buy, everything is on record, right?
Well,
so it's
kind of
a little scary.
Sort of. I mean, if you and I live next door to each other, we have the same size house, and Washington State's playing Notre Dame, I'm going to say, okay, if Notre Dame wins, you cut my grass this week, and if Washington State wins, I cut yours. Well,
yeah.
When is some half-assed barter system all over the place?
Yeah, there would be, yeah. It would kind of. There's a funny episode of Raising Hope, where they put together a barter system, and then it ends up being the barter system's inefficient because they need they need 90 prices for like 15 good economy or something like that. So they turn around and they start printing Burke bucks. If you haven't seen it, it's hilarious. I show it to my macro students and my money and banking students all the time because it does a really good job of showing how we went from barter to currency to our current system where we got this inflation.
I will bet you, and hopefully, again, hoping that we never have to see this bet play out, I will bet you that within certain areas, there becomes almost a, in colleges, I'll bet it's a case of beer. Is a thing that's worth two cases of beer, just like cigarettes in prison camps.
Maybe. If you really think about it, California, I think what California is doing, if you look at what's going on in California, I think California is the future. I think California is showing you what the effect of deficit spending and the credit expansion the Fed is doing is creating. It's creating this big chasm between the ones that don't have anything and the ones that have everything. I think California is the future of the United States if we continue on this path. I really do.
You just reminded me of something. I got to ask you, because you know more about this than anybody. We have talked with Carl, and he's going to be on tomorrow. This idea of people coming over and what's the visas where you come over and like work for Google for $60,000 a year for 2 years or something. Those kind of work. What do they call those things? There's a name for that visa, Matty. I'm going brain dead. But you come over and you can only work for that place. It's only for a period of time. It's for a certain amount of money. Right.
Firms like Google love that kind of thing because their workers can't be hired away and they don't have to bid for them, right?
Right. So I guess my question is...
I think it's just called temporary worker visa.
There's a number to it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But it's a special one of somebody who's educated. But you can only...
HBV. HBV.
Something like that, yeah. Because maybe the deal is somehow Microsoft or your firm, if you had one of those guys, you'd be in on it because the guy can't quit. If he quits your place, I guess he's got to go home. In other words, Matty works
for... The boondoggle for those big corporations.
Yeah, well, I was saying, if Google has somebody over in the West Loop and your firm wanted to hire him, they can't. So my question to Hal is, whatever skills these guys have, say they're a master's in computer technology, how hard is it from somebody from your college, then, Hal, to compete with one of these people? And what I'm trying to ask you is, what's the job really worth? Say they're paying 60, is it really worth 80? And they're keeping your guy that graduated your school down to 60 because they get these guys in at a shallow rate.
Well, we have a person that works at Westminster that runs our tax clinic, and that person talks about these issues all the time. And one of the problems that I don't think Google has is that a regular company, if you will, they have to show that the wage they're paying, I think this is how it works, they have to show that the wage they're paying this person with the visa is the wage they would pay an American and somebody born in the United States, native born, and that there is a native-born American that is qualified to do the job. So what? It almost makes it impossible for us to hire somebody, the kind of people that Google gets to hire pretty easily.
Sounds like
so
Google's...
These laws are really skewed in the favor. Google doesn't have bid for them. There's a huge supply of them overseas. Once they hire them, they're kind of locked in.
Yeah.
It's almost like a draft, right? A draft... What does a draft do? The draft allows the owners of the team to steal the worker surplus of the draftees.
Right.
Right? And that's what Google's doing with these, and other companies like Google are doing with these special visas. It's skewed in their favor, right?
Well, Carl's convinced that we're shaving $20,000 off the wages of, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of workers in this country with this program.
Well, probably for somebody that might be interested in working for Google, Google's going to hire that guy at the discount, right?
Yeah.
Because they don't have to worry about that person leaving or quitting in 2 years, right? And that person wants to stay, so they're not going to shirk, right? If they're a shirker, Google's going to get rid of them. They're going to go back to their house. So it's kind of like that argument about unemployment being too low. If unemployment's a little high, people are afraid to lose their job, so they won't shirk. So these kids that come in from these other countries on these temporary visas, they work really hard because they don't want to lose that job. Whereas an American kid, you know, they have choices, right? They can just up and quit.
Right.
So I think these rules just skew benefits to these really powerful corporations.
Well, I mean, let's just say slavery's always been terrific for the slave owner.
Well, I wouldn't say the word slavery, because they are getting paid.
Right.
Right?
Well, okay, it's indentured.
Yeah, indentured might be better, right? Yeah.
Thanks. Hal, thank you very much, as usual, terrific. I'll have you back on soon. I wouldn't mind talking to your tax guy. That'd be very interesting. Okay. I bet he would be a huge, great interview.
Yeah.
Ask him. Will you guys come on together someday?
I'll ask her if she wants to come on.
Oh, I bet she'll come on with you.
She's an interesting person.
Well,
truly,
any one of your friends, I guess, will be interesting.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Take care, everybody. SP Futures down 10, NASDAQ Futures down 17. Right back, Mr. Fari Hamzy.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN at PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, North Bay Station Jack. I'm Tom. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Murray Hamsey with us as well. SP Futures down 875. NASDAQ Futures down 15 and a quarter. We've got Apple up 330 after their earnings last night. They beat, but they, it was, I think it was actually a pretty good report.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Apple. You got all kinds of Apple, I know.
Yeah, and Apple. Yeah, I know. All my three trades were bad yesterday, but hold on.
Facebook up 7 bucks.
Remember, what Rumi tells us, night is young.
Yes.
Yes. Look where we are in the marketplace. Just hold on. Hold on.
Well, you
and look at what's happening in the geopolitical events and existential events around us. So
existential,
hold on.
I like
Be patient.
That.
Drink that tea, and this is what Captain Tico is doing this morning. Drink that tea, read that Rumi. Your come will come, my son.
Well, you're... I thought we were
your time will come, my son.
We've been amazingly quiet on the China front, and all of a sudden this morning they don't think they can do a deal with Trumpino.
Yeah,
a long-term
sure.
Deal.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
So all of a sudden we're down.
And this time we're going to do it in phases. Oh, by the way, this phase may take a little bit longer.
Yeah, well,
no, nothing is going to happen, my friend. This is a total failure.
So
I said 2 years ago. I said last year. I'm telling you today. Boom, 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 and Pelosi. I'm no fan of Pelosi. You know that. I'm a very anti-Clinton. Not too happy with the Democrats. But Pelosi, the masterful game player, just played him. Played him like a guitar. I mean, he didn't know. He had no clue what he walked into.
Well, so, nor did he
game
care.
Game is over.
The
problem is that even if it's not over, he has a lame duck. Whether the this year and next year, or another 6 years, or whatever, or another 5 years. So I think at some point people are going to wake up and say, game is over. Now, that's going to throw us into a turmoil. Well, it's time for us to keep our shorts and maybe add to it. And then down there, we'll buy it for a bargain and write it back up.
Well,
right?
The world.
And in the meantime, look, plot the SPX. What has Grumpino done for an average investor last 2 years, 2.5 years? Nothing.
Well, they keep trying to pump it up.
Yeah, but at the margin, we have a 5% chance of going up and 30%, 40% chance of going way down. I mean, that's wrong enough, especially for a mom and pop who are not nimble like you and I. And they're not sitting around the machines shooting in the preset, parameters that we know and, what odds we can manage. Average person is point, shoot, and forget, right? You buy into 401k, 30 years, come back, we got stuff for you. Well, we haven't exactly done that.
Farhi, have you been watching the something that you are, well, you're expert at a lot of things, but this thing with Boeing, I think the problem, I really hope that I'm wrong. I think they got a serious problem with that plane.
Mullenberg was talking yesterday, or some new stuff is out overnight?
Well, my Pullman experience, now this is railroad cars, and don't even begin to come with the complexity of a plane.
Right.
I remember saying, years ago, this 737, how big? I know what I flew on one of the original ones, the 200s, and I know how much difference they look now. And I mean, how much can you push this frame into bigger, bigger, bigger? I mean, now the ones before this one, between the 800s and this one, what's it, the NG or the N? They're having cracks where the wing attaches to the fuselage. Well, I'm going to say the wing on that plane, Farhi, is, I'm going to say almost twice the size as the one on the 737-200 in the 60s that I flew on. I think.
In all fairness, I don't know the detail of this because I was more of a 747 guy. But the wing box, they are crucial on all these airplanes. C-5, 747, C-141, Starlifter. The wing box is crucial, and that's what's really almost killed C-5, Galaxy. You can imagine what the Antonov 124 has done. with six engines. But you have to realize that a lot of this is simulated, okay? The simulations are massive, both on a computer basis and also in the wind tunnel. So, again, to me, that's a management failure. It's not the tools and the technology. It's the, I think, human factor, not watching what the troops did, and or maybe the, you know, coziness with FAA to allow it to go this far. I do agree there's a problem. I just don't know enough.
Yeah, I don't either. I just
to put my finger on. I mean, the complexities of the systems are not small. Now, add to that, this is a software problem. Forget the wing for a moment.
Right.
These two crashes. What is impacting it right now, that demoralizes the company, takes the market cap out, get the top guy at the Boeing commercial aircraft, commercial operation, whatever they call it, commercial, I think it's aircraft, I forgot, fired. I mean, he left, but really the news is he got fired. I don't blame him. These are major departures in terms of from the norm. To me, it's failure of a massive, gigantic, awesome system, but somehow over the years, it's failure. I mean, on 747, you would be at awe at this team when they would come down. When they would discuss things, you have issues, they would treat you, they work with you. Amazing, amazing. And from a point of confidence, you know, Boeing has been a huge, huge success. Bill Boeing came out of Yale, he's a Yalie. Came out to West Coast, and at first he's trying to sell in Southern California, decided no, that's not for him, and moved up to Washington. That's where he set up shop. And what he has done, nobody else has done. Remember, we've discussed this before. 707 made us transcontinental, okay? 747 made us intercontinental. It brought the world closer. Without that, it wouldn't be possible. All these other ones, all derivatives, up and down the size, you know, if you will, you know, the 777s and the so forth, and then the 737s in between. I remember flying 727s. You talk about the one of the aircrafts I was always worried about was 727 because the engine on in the tail. You remember that one?
Oh yeah, I was flying that all the time.
Yeah. So
back in the '90s, we went back and forth to New York. That's all you flew on was 727s.
Yeah, sure.
I always liked that plane.
Yeah, well, I always worried about it. It's a little bit too small. 737, if you are in L.A. and you're flying with L.A., what do you call it? Let's say Southwest. That's what they had. That's what was mainly you would see, especially like a Burbank Airport. That's parked all next to each other.
You know, all their single aisle jets, 707N, 707,
right.
727, 737, 757, all the fuselages were made on the same sets of tooling. Exact same size.
The fuselage was made in Northrop. I would not buy that.
Well, they're all exact same size.
They were different. Hold on. Different era, different technology, different manufacturing technology.
That part I understand.
We had continuous contracts from Northrop, from Boeing. Because we had made it, especially with 747, we had made it so cheap as a subcontractor to build and don't have to worry about it. And we had a software they didn't have called Nastran. Nastran built the airflow dynamics and simulation around the body. Okay? So I'll tell you something. I'm not sure I'll buy that. Why? We did a lot of inventory work. To see the actual visual, inspections and inventory of our tools, our storage cost, our excess parts. They were not using same tools.
I'm not saying the exact same.
And dice, no.
They're the exact same size.
Right.
So wherever they were, they're all. That's why people like flying an Airbus a little better. Because a Boeing plane is, 11.5 wide, and an Airbus is 12.6, right?
Okay, you seem to know more than I do. I'll accept it.
Well, that's why there's a little more room down the aisle with the same seats in the Airbus. That's why your flight attendants like the Airbus a little better. There's a little more room down the aisle.
Right, okay.
But I mean, but I think for my, like I said this yesterday, I'm not going to say it again, but my experience with Pullman, with the city of New York, wanted subway cars, and they'd always bought they'd always bought their subway cars with Buckeye trucks, and they were all 12,000 pounds. They've been making them like that way for like 50 years, because the rails in New York always were crap. They always were three inch gaps, 4 inch gaps, and the truck had to be pretty burly to put up with that, right? So they said, for the new ones, we want 9,000 pound trucks. Well, Buckeye said, we're not making that. We don't think it'll hold up. So North American Rockwell says, we'll make them.
Yeah.
So they plunk them on the cars. Of course, they start to fail. But you know, as a stress guy, the thing doesn't fall apart. There's going to be a failure spot, okay? So the failure spot was his bolt kept coming out. So they said, okay, we're going to put a forged bolt there. So we'll beef up the bolt. And when the bolt broke, his arm would come off the truck. And if one of the workers was standing too close to the tracks, it would, like, cut his legs off. So that wasn't so good, right? So then they put this bolt in, and sure enough, 6 months later, there's a crack a foot away from the bolt.
Oh, Jesus.
All right, so we'll re-weld that spot. Well, the metallurgical guys basically said, all we're doing is chasing the stress around the truck. It's just not heavy enough.
Yeah.
And they ended up having to replace them all. And my question is at some point when you stretch these planes and make them bigger, where it's essentially the same design, do you get to a spot where it's so important to them to have that 737 on the side and to represent the Southwest Air that your pilots can go from the 400 and hop in this one and there's no difference, that they overshot it? I hope the answer is no. But now that I'm hearing about the one before that, the NG or VG or whatever it is, the one after the 800, start having cracks where the wing hits the place, I just wonder if the thing shouldn't be a 757. You know, it should be a bigger plane.
Well, this deregulation caused a lot of gyrations, you know. In number of passengers, what do you do with tickets, how do you resell stuff in advance. I got a story here I'm going to get into.
Yeah.
To, let's say, Orbitz and Expedia and so on. Passenger loads, you know. Then at the end comes to two things: the aircraft leasing payments and the engine's design and the fuel consumption. So we've had all kinds of variations of that, including a smaller and smaller legroom,
right?
Because of the deregulation, they're trying to fit in as many people as possible. And now you have one more addition, which is the 737's the MAX fleet is grounded.
Right.
It throws a monkey wrench in your scheduling. You know, this airline scheduling is basically huge linear programming problem. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Think about it. That's one of the classical cases they try to teach you in OR. How do you set up what your need is, man load, you know, the passenger load, what your fuel costs are, what are your routes are, and what are your hubs are. You know, because remember, here in the U.S., we're public companies, but they're not national. They're not privately owned public companies. They're not government owned. So how do you set this up? The end result is the deregulation allows me to fly from New York to L.A. on a cheap flight, not a fancy, not a convenient flight, probably $300. It costs you one of that in fuel if you drove.
Right.
How do you get there is all this chaos, this craziness, optimization, linear programming, and so forth, to make the airplane at this price, the engines at that. This is the utilization of the fuel. This is the cap we're going to pay you guys, okay? In terms of the, now, I'm not talking about 747, but some of these smaller aircrafts, these pilots are young, they get paid very little. Some of them basically live at poverty level, almost. If you look at some of the reports from 60 Minutes and ProPublica and so on, Frontline, it's just scary. But this is what the deregulation has caused. In the meantime, they go crazy on fees. Oh, you got too much baggage, or you want food, this, that. So the business has changed quite a bit. Some of the aircraft haven't. It's not easy to change aircraft that easy. A typical aircraft like this, I venture to say, is a 10-year life cycle from idea to make it fly. If they make it faster because of demands, then you're right. They must be borrowing some concepts. Look, what changed 747 was its tail design. At the beginning, 747 had a lot of issues, but its tail design, and the guy who came up with the answer, because they had to come up with the algorithm that defines that tail, the very tail end, and has the least aerodynamic impact, was Phil Condit, and he became chairman. Not then. Years later, yep. Nobody forgot what his contributions were. So these systems are very complex.
Well, they're amazingly complex. And what
we have made them complex. I was looking at the cockpit of 727.
Well,
these poor folks, what they had to go through with the captain, first officer, and flight mechanic.
Yeah, they used to have three people in there.
Yeah, three, yeah.
That's why
one on the side.
Yeah, they couldn't wait to get the 727 out of the air because they only want two people up there. They used to have three.
Right. Well, that's another cost cutting.
Yeah.
All this cost cutting is a huge issue. It's a huge issue.
Actually, Farrah, you're gonna believe this. University of Chicago, I took this, one of the dumbest things I've done. I've done quite a few. I took a...
Well, we never stop, remember?
Yeah, well, you talk about linear programming and so forth.
Yeah.
You actually can't use linear programming for your pilots. You have to be integer programming because you can't show up with half a pilot. So it's actually a whole different escalation of the problem. You can't just minimize and maximize things because you have to end up with an even number. You can't show up with 9/10 of a pilot, you know. You either got one or you don't.
You're right.
And so it was an entire course where we would set up problems and yet solving them were beyond the scope of the course. So you never actually solved the problem. You just listened to all this theory. I was in there where there were seven people in class. The other six already had jobs with like Mobil and Exxon and those kinds of places. Because the people would do that were guys that would go to a refinery and they'd get all the prices of like all the different oil products, diesel, gasoline, and so forth, and they would test the oil, and they'd have a chemist try and say, okay, what is the optimal batch money-wise of this truckload or carload of oil? Well, how much gasoline, how much diesel, how much paraffin, how much hydraulic? I mean, you can move them around a little bit, and that's how they would, and those people worked at those places. Then there was me, who didn't know any of this stuff. How I got out of that class, I have no idea. Sorry, I think I don't know. I'm sure I got a C or something, but it was beyond the end of the world. But one of the most difficult problems that you just mentioned, I'll lob this one out there, you ever heard of this, the salesman covering problem?
No.
It's if Fari or Matty Weber, if you sell sporting equipment. And you get up in the morning and bright and early, and you're going to go to 10 different high schools and talk to the coaches and try and sell uniforms and so forth to try and figure out the which one you go to first and second and third to minimize the trip, especially if you're talking about 50, 60 destinations like you do at airlines and stuff. It's an amazingly difficult problem to solve. There's no formula. You get into these things where you go to this place and you pivot to it. It took a guy like 50 years to solve it, and it's all it's a whole level of math where there's no multiplication or division. You're pivoting from one to the other and always trying to maximize. And it takes forever to be able to do that. It's like how do I get all these different pilots in these different places and such that they don't have to deadhead. I don't have to do this and that. Well, you're talking about for airlines, it's very complicated to be efficient. I'm just agreeing with you. I shouldn't do that. I know, but what do you make So what do you make of the apples and the? I mean, we've got the drip, drip, drip of money coming from the Fed. We saw that, yes, from Chairman Powell,
right.
Who's totally to me, crawled under a rack or something. But that's what we're dealing with. Now we're down a little bit this morning. We're only down 6.25 now, even though the Chinese news was probably less than bullish. But we still got this drip, drip, drip of money coming in, and it. Can you explain why they're doing this, Farrah, other than that they want to keep asset prices up for a while?
It doesn't make sense at all, but maybe they're really panicked. The economy is a lot worse than it is. Just don't want to say it. You know, and that's the only way. Why would you cut rates up here?
Well,
the economy must not be doing good. By the way, I just put a 727 cockpit picture on Twitter for you guys under an and I addressed it to Stocking Jock. So
how long would it take? Look, how long would it take?
Why would you be up here when it be if the economy is doing good? What are you cutting rates for?
Well, one quick question. If you walk into a 727 with all those manual, how long would it take somebody who's pretty bright to even know what those hundreds of switches
the
even
train?
Do?
Oh, well, I don't know about 727. Let me just see 130. Tactical cargo. 50 years they built it. They sold almost every country has it. And a lot of them are in use, especially the, now, of course, the one with the six blade prop is the C-130J. My dad didn't fly that. But he flew up to the H. He was a, of course, you know, toward the end, they didn't change as much. It was really a very mature plane. The dash one on that aircraft is about 5 inches thick. And remember, it's a three binder, three oils, four port binder. You have to keep on updating it. That change is coming from the factory. You have to pull the right one out, replace it at the right place. Why? In an emergency, you know where to go. Well, if those pages are not in the right place, you don't have time to find them. You're done. Now, for the basic trainings, it took about 3 months to understand what was going on. To be a second officer took about another 3 months. So you would fly within 6 months, you would fly. But if you were a captain, you had to know all the systems. Because remember, you have crew chiefs, you have this, that, that. You have different people who do different things there. On a C-130, remember, this is a 60s technology. Pretty much what 727 was, there was something around, I'm sorry, 840 fuses. 840 fuses. If something went wrong, you better know which fuse you have to pull. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't pull the wrong fuse. You're going to mess up something else, yeah.
Well, Farley, are there any people, say we're United, are there any people that are 757 pilots and all of a sudden they land at a place and there's a 767 sitting there and they say that are qualified in two different planes at the same time?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
Are there any, if you and I are a 757 pilot,
right,
and all of a sudden we land at O'Hare and the guy who's supposed to fly to 737 or 767 doesn't show up, are there any people who are qualified for two planes at the same time? Or you pilot and say,
you could if you've done a transition, but you've gone through the simulation and you know, you're signed off. Somebody flew with you and said you know. I suspect that maybe what they may be doing now, I don't know. I'm just suspecting. Because they're a lot software-based, some of the systems, some could be, in terms of the learning of them, could be transportable. That is, what you see on that monitor, the monitor X, whatever, you have multiple monitors now, right? You have what's called a glass cockpit now. You have all this, LEDs, basically.
Okay.
Small, like computer monitors, all over it, and a touchscreen now, of course, that's how touchscreens started, from the application of the military and then commercial aircrafts, then came to us. But I suspect some of it is the same, okay? It is a user interface, but of course the calculations and the data capture and so forth is different. Different design, different hardware, whatever. But it can't be all. So if you have not flown and signed off on it, that is, somebody said, hey, I'm a captain, he sat next to me, we flew for 8 hours and he's doing fine, then I don't think anybody will allow you to jump in. FAA won't allow you to just jump in an aircraft.
So if you're a 727 guy in the old days...
You may be cleared on that.
Yeah, if you're a 727 guy in the old days, you don't just hop in a DC-8 and fire it up.
Doesn't work like that anymore. You know, because especially the software side.
Okay.
I mean...
All right, Farley, real quick, what about this market? Is there any place you can fade it here with the Fed doing this, or you got to stay long?
Well, today is the... First of all, I say this. Today is it's a data. The day after Fed day, it does a reversal. That's just normal. So if went up last yesterday, we should give back some. But my charts, what I'm looking at, tells me that we have a very small upside potential and a big downside. So odds are I should better be short with a tight stop. And one of them is going to work. We just don't know what.
All right, bud. Take care of yourself. We'll trade
you
well.
Soon. Thank you.
SP Futures down 7, NASDAQ Futures down 11. Come back, Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
For my monster from his lab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now, right now.
Where did the Monster Mash come from? Great old song.
It's Halloween.
That's true. It is. You have candy, so I don't have to get any?
Definitely not. That's the one of the perks of being on the third floor.
Actually, I have some, and usually you get like one group, and then that's it. So I got some. Then we get to eat the rest, I guess. SP Futures up, down 7.25. NASDAQ Futures down 12.75. News of the day is that a report out of China that says, have doubts over long-term U.S. trade deal. Don't know if they can make a deal with Trump. So that's interesting. Dow down 52. Around the rest of the world, but I don't, like I said, I don't pay, after all this time, it's kind of hard to pay attention to all this stuff. DAX down 12, they call that flat. FTSE down 64.9%. CAC around down 12.2%. Just to talk to David about Peugeot is getting their butt kicked. They're down another 12% today. I don't know what the intricacy of that deal is. Maybe David does. Nikkei up 83.4%. Shanghai down 10.3%. Hang Seng up 239.9%. These guys up, down, kind of. They're doing their routine bands. 1.73. So they're slightly up. The Bund minus 0.40. It got down to minus 0.36, I believe. And the Japanese 10-year minus 0.15. It got down to minus 0.11. I thought it was going to go above zero. Now it's kind of heading the other way a little bit. Oil still in the range, down 60 cents, 54.44. Brent down 29.60, 32. Natural gas, however, with a goose, up another 2 cents, 271. It's up from 228, really, in 3 weeks. Of course, it's freezing outside. That would cause something like that. RBOB gas, 166. Gold with a little rally here, up 1250, 1509. Silver up 15 cents, 1802. A copper flat on its behind, minus 2 cents, 265. So no hope there for the people who are thinking these third world economies are getting better. Copper will not move. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports, man?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty slow start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, but everyone is behaving themselves. No major accidents to report, so that's good news. But due to the wet and slick conditions in the surrounding areas, we do have slow travel times coming in on the Edens and Kennedy, Eisenhower especially, and traffic building on the Stevenson and on the south side as well. But no accidents or major issues to report on the area expressways. Only crash on the screen right now is in the northern suburbs, Aptakissick Road eastbound at Wayland Road. There is an accident. But give yourself plenty of time as you're heading out this morning, as weather today will be ugly. Rain, snow, and sleet mix on and off throughout the day. Highs in the mid-30s, going up to a high of 37. We could see 1 to 3 inches of snow accumulation in the city. More than that to the north and northwest suburbs, up to 6 inches out there. Right now it is rainy and 36 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 77 today. Right now it's clear and 43. In sports, the Washington Nationals are your 2019 World Series champions. They beat the Astros last night 6-2, winning that best-of-seven series 4-3, with the road team winning all 7 games, which has never happened before. Steven Strasburg was named World Series MVP. NBA basketball, Bulls are off to a 1-4 start after losing in Cleveland last night, 117-111. Suns beat the Warriors 121-110. Blackhawks were off last night. They're off again the next couple of nights before returning to action on Saturday at LA. Coyotes lost to the Canadiens last night 4-1. And Thursday night football returns to action tonight. It'll be the undefeated 49ers at the Arizona Cardinals.
Chief, I thought they were going to bring that Cole guy in the last few innings last night. They didn't, did they?
They warmed him up. I saw that. I didn't see if he got in or not.
Yeah, I didn't make it to the last inning. David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, do you mind? I got to ask Mr. Weber a question here. A lot of Matty, you've been off doing like real work on these conventions and stuff, and with clients and so forth. You've kind of missed some of the testimony, probably last weekend, this week. But it seems when they're talking about Facebook and some of these other people, whatever you want to call the media, social media?
Social media.
Social media, and it seems like they don't even want to put the rules that regular media have toward these guys. And I just kind of wanted to sort of go over. I mean, I listened to Zuckerberg talk about he's got his own team that's going to, make sure that they're going to fact check and do this other kind of stuff, and like he's going to judge whether. What? How does it work at? Well, you worked at the Score, and you know a lot more about newspaper stuff than I do. If I wing an ad into the Tribune, whether it's political, whether it's you know, my business, whatever it happens to be, who proofreads that? I mean, and what, obviously you can't use, you know, the N-word or the F-word. I mean, I understand the obvious parts, but who gets to essentially, say yes or no? Are there specific rules, or does, how does that even work? Well, I guess who's the ethics board on that ad?
Well, I don't know if you have an ethics board for a radio station, but you simply have a marketing department that has to approve anything that goes on the air before it goes on the air. So you can buy advertising, and then the company that buys the advertising's marketing department works with the radio station's marketing department, and both sides essentially have to sign off on the script that's either read live on the air or that's recorded into a commercial. And you know, both sides basically have to sign off on it, and so that's how that works. Now, from a Facebook perspective, they
So the ad comes in, and I'm a Hillary hater, and I have something. There's some edge. There's some spot there that somebody's going to say, you can't say that on the air about anybody. I mean, who gets to decide where the spot is?
Well, you have, like I just said, you have a team that decides that.
Okay,
and they represent the company, so. You know, I don't know, the final decision is that the president of the company, I doubt it, but it could potentially go pretty high up if a lot of money's involved.
But who, what if it did go too far and they start getting sued and stuff, then what? I mean, what if they said something bad about you and you thought they were over the top? What's your...
Well, it's happened before where political ads have been pulled from TV and radio stations where someone thought it was too far, and then upon further review, they agreed or wanted to avoid a lawsuit, and they pulled it.
Okay, so the next question, when we were on the radio, and hopefully we will be soon again, one of the first things we have to sign, you know, you won't explain it to me, David, I don't know if you know this, but you get this thing that you have to file, this thing. And it says, what's like the cheapest ad you ran in the last, was it quarter, Matty, or month, or whatever it is? And say the rate's $10 an ad. You gotta be careful that you never put an ad out there for $10. Because that means that every politician essentially gets to buy ads. What is it, the lowest rate you gave to anybody else in the last 30 days or 60 days, Matty, or something like that? Because we had to do that when we were on all those different stations we paid to be on. But now my question is, can we just say we're not running a political ad? Or not. I mean, if somebody comes to me and says, I want to put this ad for Lori Lightfoot on there, and it's nothing wrong with it, can we say we're not running it?
No. The rule is that, and there's a way they say this. I think it's called, you have to give reasonable access. So you can determine that it's not going to run on a certain show or at a certain time.
Okay.
You have that control, but you have to provide reasonable access for political ads.
All right. So my question now, a long way of getting there, both of you guys, is how does Twitter, I mean, what do they define themselves as where they can say we're just not taking any political ads?
They're not at all part of the FCC, so it doesn't apply to them whatsoever.
Right. The next question, you know what's coming. Okay, who do they answer to, or should they answer to the FCC or somebody like that?
Do I think they should? I don't think they should answer to the FCC, but, I mean, doesn't matter what I think.
No, but I'm saying as part of this thing, and I'm going to go more on this because I want David to talk about the market, but as part of the congressmen and people, you know, basically bitching at Zuckerberg and the rest of these people, nobody seems to know what they should be. I mean, it started off with, you know, you being able to talk to your family and girlfriend on Facebook, and all of a sudden they'll tell you, we're a news organization. Well, do the same rules apply to them as apply to WGN TV, radio, New York Times?
That's a good question. They don't today, but should they? I mean, that's
well, if
a
they're
good
a
question.
News organization, they're a news organization. What's the difference between them and us?
I've never thought of them as a news organization, and I still don't think of them as a news
what
organization.
What I'm saying is Zuckerberg does.
I see them as no different than a bulletin board on a, you know, a wall, where, you know, they give you the bulletin board, but you can post whatever you want on there, and it's up to you to read it or not read it, or, you know, take an ad or not take an ad, or take a phone number for a guitar lesson or not take a phone number for a guitar lesson. I don't look at them as actually writing and distributing news and reporting.
I'm going to say that if David runs for president and you're his campaign manager, you're going to call up the Tribune, you're going to call up WGN, maybe, you're going to call up CNBC, maybe, and you're going to call up Zuckerberg. And you're going to plunk an ad.
I agree with that.
Places the same way.
But my point is that Facebook, in my opinion, is different. It's more like the person handing out the flyers.
Okay.
So, you know, you're going to call up the Tribune, you're going to call up, you know, WGN, like you said, but you're also going to have people boots on the ground handing out flyers. Facebook's just a faster way to hand out flyers.
Right, but
I don't think it's quite the same thing, but I could be wrong, and
I think,
know,
there, I think
a
you,
judge could determine it differently.
I'm thinking 5 years ago you were probably 100% right. Now you might be 20% right, because Zuckerberg sees himself as this vast news organization where he's actually talking about ethics, people going over the ads and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's got himself in that spot. That's where they're making their money.
Well, that, no question about that.
All right, David, sorry, bud.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with your analysis. I think Twitter is where news is posted and exchanged back and forth, whether it's market news or political news or whatever, until Jack Dorsey pulled the plug on this. Facebook, I think, has been more or less, and I'd say more than less, what Maddie was describing as a bulletin board and really a social kind of meeting place. Yes, they took, you know, advertisements for news, politics, etc. But the only reason that that Zuckerberg is coming forward and saying, "Oh yeah, we have to be responsible for ethics, and we're going to clean up, you know, whatever, and we're going to monitor ourselves, and this quarter we're going to spend $20 million more than what we had to adjust our algorithms to monitor for fake accounts and for fake, you know, political situations that are sponsoring, you know, one candidate or the other," is because government has brought pressure.
Well, the dude came out last night in his conference call and said they expected $450 million in political ads. Well, to me, that makes you the Tribune. Just saying. I mean, it's a lot of money.
Well, it makes you the Tribune if you're reporting on news.
But news.
Just because you're accepting
ads. A political
ads.
Ad and saying, "Hey, I'm great, and I killed the leader of ISIS and whatever, and, you know, I cut down, you know, illegal immigration." I'm not sure that's necessarily news. It's rap.
Okay, but suppose instead of us doing what we do, this was a rock and roll station, and we took a political ad for Trump. I mean, what's the difference? We're selling political ads. I mean, now he's selling political
ads. An ad is an ad. News is news.
All right, I'm talking about he is planning on taking $450 million of political ads. Now, Maddie, I'm sure, is correct that the same rules, at least currently, don't apply to him as to a radio station or a newspaper. My point is, what applies? Does he get to do whatever? I mean, why is it different?
You're going to have to ask the government, the Congress, because they're the ones who are bringing all this to the front to decide what rules govern, you know, Facebook and, for that matter, Google and perhaps Amazon and Twitter and who knows who else.
I'm
well, right now, they can basically do whatever they want, it seems like.
Well, I'm saying, right. But I mean, I at some point, and we've had this argument before, Manny and I, at some point, Uber's a cab company. And if cabs have to be inspected every 6 months, so should Uber. You're picking up somebody's behind in one place and dropping it off somewhere else. I mean, if you listen to him talk, he absolutely feels that that's the future of the cash in that place, is being an ad source. So,
it's not the future; it's the current.
It's the current
and the past.
Well, it's the past, current, and seriously the future, right?
Well, it's the only way they've ever made money.
Right? Okay.
Nothing's changed.
All right, David. We got Fed doing their thing yesterday. They're going to drip more money into the system. It's hard to go short, yet we're kind of at a high level. There's a group that says they're seeing something we're not seeing, so you got to be cautious. But at the same token, it looks like there's money creeping in every day. So I don't know what to make of it. So straighten me out here.
Well, I told you Monday. I've told you for the last 3 weeks that, you know, basis front month future, you could hedge, or even if you had a lot of cojones, you could sell a little bit and go a little bit short, or at least hedge, you know, with puts or short calls against portfolios between 3009 and 3015 basis front month S&P future. And after that, you couldn't be short anymore. And that's it. And I said Monday, you cannot be short anymore. And the only way you can sell it is on a violation of support downside till it gets back down to 3005 or preferably just from a psychological standpoint, below 3,000, you cannot sell the market. I'm not saying to buy it. There's some extension in some of the technical oscillators. There's some divergences where the oscillator's not making new highs along with the underlying. But you cannot sell the market when every single break is bought and the thing creeps to new highs. It's not dynamic on the upside. Volume's low. There's a lot of, you know, negativism. I saw a story yesterday that, you know, if you took all the investors' newsletters and whatever, you had 27% bullish. One of the lowest readings in 11 years. So everyone's bearish and it keeps going up. Does that tell you anything? You want to be short? I don't.
Well, I mean,
I don't necessarily want to be real long, but
well,
I certainly don't want to be short.
To me, it's somewhat of a... I mean, I obviously believe it's a Fed phenomenon that you don't want to fight, but if we continue to get...
Yes, Fed money and liquidity and easing and this and that and the other and support and stock buybacks. We would not be here without that. That said, that's what's happening. You can't fight it.
I would agree, except I do. I always wonder, you know me, that I still... And this is probably the single biggest flaw in my thinking, David. From when you and I grew up on the floors and so forth, we always believed, and certainly my education was the same way, we always believed that the market was bigger than everybody, even the government. I mean, maybe not on a daily or weekly basis, but I honestly still believe, even though I have to really be careful, I don't trade this way for people, I honestly still believe that if we have the slowdown we're seeing, if it gets worse, which I don't want to have happen to prove my point, but if it continues to get like worse and worse, I don't see how. I think that eventually trumps, not talking about the president, I'm talking about the bridge Trump.
Nice pun.
Yeah, that eventually trumps how much money you can pour into the system. I think you run out of gas. And right now, I honestly believe that they're having to do more and more to get less and less further.
It's probably true, but how do you time that?
Timing is always a problem.
As much as I said Monday, and even for the last few weeks, that if you violated 3,015, you could no longer be short. You know, that I also said it will end badly. You know, these debt equity ratios, as well as, you know, whatever, Powell getting up and saying, oh, you know, we can always have to maintain at least $1.5 trillion balance sheet, you know, going on $4 trillion, you know, it's not going to end well. But when that is, and when you have to really take protection, I mean, I don't have the answer to that, and that's why I let the chart do my job.
David, you'd be proud of me for my short calls for people. I have very, very few that are in the money, and the ones that are in the money are only a couple bucks in. So I've really, as much as I've sort of hated this rally, I've stayed out of the way of it, which is pretty good for me.
Yeah, that's the way to be. And if they're in the money, hey, I got some deeps.
Yeah.
Fine. Take the stock.
Well, hey, I've got another question for you here. This is what happens is you and I always kind of like to quote history, but how far can you quote it? There's an article today in should be easy enough, Y-U-N, Yun Li, is that how you pronounce it? Must be. L-I, that part I can get. Anyway, these stocks are typically the best bets when the Fed jolts the economy with 3 rate cuts. So she swings us back to in the 1990s, the Fed cut 3 times in a row, a couple of times. I'm a feeling that probably had something to do with Y2K, but I don't know that. I have to go back and figure out when they did 3 in a row, David. So essentially there was a time in the 90s where they did a 3 and done, which sort of what Powell indicated this is for this time. Get a load of this. CNBC using hedge fund analytics tool Kensho. What the hell is that?
Yeah, Kensho. Yeah, that's been around for a couple of years.
Why does everybody know all this stuff except me? God's sake, that's why I have you on. what is it? Anyway, found that information technology sector surged a whopping 66% a year after the third cut on average in the 90s. Energy and industrial stock both jumped an average of 24% on average during the same period. I'm going to say that's something very, very interesting, but I have to believe that both energy and information technology are in two totally different spots on the growth curve now than they were then. So you got to be real careful with this. I mean, something's going to go up, but I don't think you had a situation where, even though I still have some people in the XLE, David, because I think it's down so low, it's going to come back some. I don't really, I got the XLE at 58.12. I'm thinking it goes back to 65, 66, and I can have a good last part of the year or next year for my guys. I don't see it going back to 80 anytime soon, ever. I mean, I just don't. I don't think there's enough goose in that industry anymore. And information technology, they were young people in the 90s. Now some of those are somewhat long in the tooth. Not that they're not going to continue to do well, but I don't think they're. I think 66% in a year is a reach, like it did in the 90s.
But beyond that, not only are they long in the tooth, but the competitive nature is just. I mean, you know, your Workdays and your Salesforce and your Adobes and I mean Opta and you know Cloudera and I mean I could go on and on and on and on. There's just a million of them. And VMW and I mean yeah, the data is the king thing. That's your new industrial is cloud and data management. That's it. But I mean I had at dinner with a fellow from a young startup, and he was showing me you know literally records of how this little startup worth about $600 million is taking huge market share from VMW just because their product is better and more accepted. They're taking, you know, million and multi-million dollar a year accounts away from a listed company that's backed by Dell. So, you know, when you get that kind of competitive environment and margins come down, even if that is not only the present but the future, you know, how do you pick? Even if you pick an index, you know, that's diversified, you still may not get the bang that what you thought because all of a sudden these little tiny ones come in and find a niche, find a way to wedge through on the big boys.
Okay, so I mean, if we had to guess, if we're saying this lady is maybe 100% correct because that was the 90s and this is now, the Fed drops, I'll average this out and make it simple, they drop $3 billion in the middle of state in Madison today, which they're going to do every day, which is $60 billion a month, right? So they drop $3 billion in there. Well, I'm going to say definitively it's not going to David Adelman, Matt Weber, or the Chiefs' pocket. All right, so there's three places we can say it's not going. I'm going to say most of the listeners, it's not going into their pocket. Let's say some of it gets dropped on the market, but there's still going to be down stocks today or tomorrow or Monday. Which sectors do you think it drops into first, David? I mean, I don't know if I'd have a clue. I would guess because they have the pricing power. I will guess the drug companies and the people like the Apples of the world and maybe even the Facebooks. But that would be my guess.
Yeah, I think those are good choices. I mean, I really don't have a big presence in healthcare. IBB, XBI, you know, any of those, XLV, any of that, but I think that's a good area. And, you know, some of the health management, you know, issues that have been beaten down, your Anthems and your United Health because of fear of what Warren or Sanders might do, I don't think that's going to get done. We're not going to single-payer Medicare for all. Even if they get elected, it's just not going to happen. And so, you know, that's an area as well. I just think, you know, the innovations in that area are spectacular. You know, witness Biogen, you know, whatever, or this other company, MRTX, that, you know, just has a chance. They tested 6 people for multiple sclerosis. Three showed, you know, improvements, and the stock roared up 20%. I mean, just the thought of curing some of these incurable, you know, diseases is, you know, gonna ramp up.
David, not to get into a, just I'll just briefly mention. I know,
and
somebody,
I don't own any of those.
But I know somebody who had MS and it was getting a lot worse, and she went down to South America, someplace. It was either there or Russia, and got this treatment, and I think she's fine. I mean, is there, and somebody else I know that's got some kind of ovarian cancer. They're going to Mexico.
It's unbelievable what they're doing. I mean, some of these electrical things with targeting genetics and whatever, and just stopping the genetics from regrowing cells or whatever.
Are we
innovation that's taking place behind the scenes? You know, and it does come to a headline, but not often.
Are we stopping that?
It's a good area to be in.
Are we stopping that innovation here? Somehow,
I don't know the answer to that. I know that we're making it more and more expensive. but I don't know if stopping is the right word.
Last question. We only got 30 seconds. The basic industries that I keep looking at and keep dabbing my toe in and keep finding boiling water there, your Cleveland Cliffs, your U.S. Steel, are these guys just dead forever or what?
I honestly don't know the answer to it, but I just think manufacturing is on the way out and data and data management is on the way in.
I keep trying
to
It'll
go never disappear, but it's always going to be in the background.
All right, thanks, David. I keep trying to go along as FCX, and the copper won't go anywhere near it as that thing. So I think they're just toast. SP Futures down 6.25. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
And suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.